Welcome to the Tripod, where we break down the NRL every game, every week from a punting perspective. I'm Jacob Wynn. I'm barbecuing alone. The Podonis was actually at Suncorp Stadium visiting from his native Sydney to witness his Broncos have an emphatic victory this afternoon. So I'll be here alone to talk us through the four games that we watched in round 17 and what we learned. And the biggest objective, what I want to do when I talk about the games, is not say the obvious. You guys have probably, you've seen the scores, you see the highlights. We want to talk from a punting perspective. What can we learn and how did we attack that game? And were we right in our methodology? You know, if a team won really well, like the first game we'll talk about, Sharks Storm, we can say there was a clear right side. If we had our chance over, we would be definitely on that one side. If we actually took that as a bet, then we want to say, all right, did we pick it for the right reasons? Did it play out the way we expected? If not, what happened that we didn't see coming? If in a game where we get it wrong, we want to be able to say, at least why did we get it wrong? Something must have happened that we didn't expect. Then there'll be games where you look at it and you go, yeah, one team or the other always covers the line. But it doesn't mean there was necessarily a right side. Maybe it's a kind of game you feel like if it was played many times, each side would have had their chance to cover. And no matter who you bet on, you wouldn't have been ultra profitable, but you wouldn't have done too badly in the long run. So that's what we want to kind of find out when we look at each game. And before we do that and we discuss the four matches, let's find out how the bookies fared in round 17.
Hey, Tripod family, it's Tristan Merlihan here from Top Sport. And we've had obviously a very short week in the football, and turnovers have been a little bit up and down on the game so far this weekend. But the first game, we obviously saw the late news, or the day before news, of the Nico Hines, and it caused the market to move 6-7.5 points in Melbourne's direction. And we probably were quite happy with ourselves that we managed to get out of the road of that business early, and we didn't really get ourselves into a tricky spot, because those are the books that can be really ugly when it moves that far. But then we happened to lay a stack of money late for the Sharks plus the start, and obviously that were way too good for a Storm side, which I'm sure their fans are starting to get a little bit concerned by their performances in the last fortnight. Then the Knights were well backed against the Bunnies. The Bunnies covered, so we were quite happy with that result. And then in the Tigers-Eels game, there was good support for the Eels at the minus, which they obviously weren't able to cover that, but the there was a few exotics, a halftime, full time, which I'm sure a punter's very, very happy with himself getting out of trouble there when they were down by quite an amount early in the half. Going into the last game, the Dragons were very, very well supported early. Then there was a little bit of a push late for the Broncos. We got a pretty even book, slightly favoured towards the we're after the Dragons there. But moving into Origin, there's obviously been a massive move in the market. It's gone from 2.5 out to 8.5, and might even be further now. Let me have a quick look. Yeah, it's out to 8.5. So the punters, well, it's not really the punters on them, because it was more so a move on the back of the withdrawals. So unfortunately, it probably takes a little bit away from the contest, but this is probably the position that Queenslanders like to be in. So we'll see how it goes. We've got Wimbledon tonight. That's going to be a cracking affair. Obviously, Nick Kyrgios in the final. We're actually cheering him on. I don't know if there'd be too many Aussie bookies out there that are doing the same, because he was $26 pre-tournament, and there were some punters that got involved and they've been backing him the whole way through. But we did have one of our larger punters have a really good crack at Novak at the start of the event. So all on the Aussie Nick train from our perspective. Hopefully he can perform well, and we'll all be watching tonight. All right, good luck on Origin.
Yeah, that's going to be massive Wimbledon final tonight. You've got to stay up and watch that and cheer on Nick no matter what you think of him. It should be pretty entertaining. Crazy to think Kyrgios has never lost to Djokovic. Maybe he hasn't hung around in enough tournaments to face him enough times. Got to give a shout out. The Undertaker did tip Jabir in the women's at 34-1 on Dabble. A few people in the group, I think 80 or so, riding that one last night, and she was up winning the first set before falling in the second and third. So she starts favorite as well. You're into like $1.15 live to win that futures, but it falls short. Let us know if you're on a future, if you maybe grab those juicy odds on Kyrgios, or if you've had a bet on that one. And then Origin, a reminder, we're going to do our Origin decider preview show tomorrow and bring in all the wise minds and some former legends to weigh in on that one. Tomorrow, same time you usually get a pod, so maybe 6:15 p.m. on YouTube will be the place to catch that. Some unique markets as well, but just madness. That the second that news broke, Munster and Taulagi out, instantly the line went from 2.5 to 7.5. And as Tristan said, that was the instant, you know, reaction and saying those players are worth about five. And then when people have had a little bit of time to weigh it up and make their bets, they've pushed that line even further. Now 8.5 you can get on Queensland. But I'll share my thoughts on the decider tomorrow in the preview show. Let's just talk about the four games that there were. This was a bit of a surprise. Thursday night, the Sharks beat the Storm 28-6. To give you a bit of an idea of how we thought about this game and how close we were to playing the Sharks, we chatted about it on Wednesday before doing the pod. We definitely didn't see this scoreline coming. We felt it was close to a 50-50 game. We felt the only way you could justify a best bet on this game would be to take either team as an underdog. So like if the Storm would have been an underdog available in some markets, we might have even played the Storm. If we could have played Sharkies as an underdog, we might have played them. And it was around Pick'em a couple hours, maybe 4 hours before we did the pod. Then we noticed you could get plus 2.5 on Sharks. And Podonis and I are like, we should take that. But we felt that was a bit fishy. Like, why did the line suddenly jump out? Sure enough, within a few minutes of that, the news had come out that Nicho Hynes was out with COVID. So then we said, well, we don't want any part of that 2.5. And the line was pretty much 5.5 across the board. In fact, Bet365 had gone to 6.5. And we're talking saying Nicho Hynes isn't worth 6.5 points. We probably got to play the Sharks. So we're ready to lock in a best bet of Sharks plus 6.5. And then the line dips back down to 5.5. We say, well, 5.5, it's a lean to Sharks, as we described on the pod. We felt that was a serious adjustment for one player. So we didn't, you know, play it as a best bet, just a lean to the Sharkies. Annoyingly, the line actually crept back out beyond 6, and it was certainly available 6.5 all day Thursday. And that's on us because we could have still pulled the trigger. We could have still posted on social media, we will take the Sharks. Now it's beyond a converted try. In fairness, I suppose, Rudolph, we didn't realize, was also had COVID on Wednesday afternoon. I'm kind of thinking, well, okay, it was 5.5 and I just thought it was Nicho. Now it's Rudolph as well. Could anyone else in the Sharks team have gotten it? We just stayed away, and it's a bit annoying because we might have had a winning best bet there. But regardless, just didn't see this type of performance coming. I've got to tell you, Jesus, Sharkies were slick in that first half. They didn't miss a beat with Trindle sliding in there, and the Storm didn't have an answer for anything the Sharkies served up to them. I mean, in the first half, it's only 10-0 with a few minutes to go, and then the Sharkies score a couple of really late tries that extends it. I think 20-0 was the halftime score. And then what you saw was a frustrated and desperate Melbourne side in the second half, and that was epitomised by Brandon Smith giving a serve to the referee. He gets sin-binned, penalised in possession. What I really noticed about Melbourne, because you kind of just always expected them to come back. You know, they're pre-game, they're decent favourites. We even saw them make a real late flurry of tries come back against Manly last week, even though they fell short. You're thinking they're going to come back, but you just really notice it does seem like they're not all on the same page. And it feels like a bunch of individuals that are trying to just throw it to somebody and hope they're going to make something happen. And that could have been Pappenhausen, and it is him some weeks. But, I mean, he was hampered in this game too. Copped a knee in the back, had a finger injury as well. So he wasn't quite right. You know, Hughes can't do it all on his own. They're missing outside backs, obviously missing a couple of forwards as well. Harry Grant wasn't there. And you really see the value of a Cameron Munster in that he hasn't been there the last couple of weeks, and the Storm have been blown off the park. And I asked this question to you guys. Do you start to reconsider the Storm's grand final credentials? We would have probably thought that the Storm are the number one challenger to the Panthers and the number one side, probably with the opportunity to stop the Panthers from repeating. So a lot of people would be expecting that they're still going to make a grand final. At what point do you start getting concerned? You can make excuses for them because they haven't had their key personnel all available the last couple of weeks. But you do start to wonder, because now that's multiple times they've had big scores put on them. You go back a few weeks earlier this season, you know, Penrith, North Queensland put a big score on them as well. It's just not the Melbourne that we're used to seeing. In past seasons, even when they've had guys out, they've still performed better than we've expected. And for Cronulla, they had a really tough run of opponents coming up. Well, this is huge for them to get this win under the adversity of losing their halfback before the game. And it's prime for the Sharkies to really get into the top four. The other sides they're fighting with, Brisbane, Parramatta, we'll get to those. Those sides won as well. So for Cronulla to not give up any ground on those teams is big. And the other criticism people had of Cronulla was they couldn't beat any contending teams. They really didn't have many wins on their resume against really gun sides. I suppose you could say they've They beat Parramatta in round two, and they did score a winning try in the final minute. And that was about their one of their best wins of the season, if you look back. So this is a kind of a big statement win and an important win that shows the Sharkies could, you know, be right up there in the ladder and then have a team that can make a bit of noise in the finals potentially. Let's move on to Friday, which was, I'll have to talk about this for a bit because this was the game that we lost our best bet, which we took Knights plus 6.5 and they lost to the Rabbitohs 40-28. So what I said about the Knights a week ago, when they, even though they beat the Titans, I still kind of said this is a feeble team that looks really good when they're riding momentum and has absolutely no backbone whatsoever when the acid is on them. And that's kind of what happened in this game. They had a really good period of play after conceding the opening try. I want to talk about that, where they scored three straight. Honestly, you're like a 4.5-point favorite when the game closes. Sorry, 4.5-point underdog. Rabbitohs have got about 6 or 7 out, some of their best players because of Origin. Rabbitohs lost their halfback in the second tackle of the game. You're up double digits at home. You've got to win. You've got to go on and win that game, and there's no excuse to not win it, let alone the Knights then give up the next 5 tries. But that just goes to show that when one thing goes against Newcastle, they crumble. And you can say, well, it's your fault. Tripod's the one that backed them with the best bet. Look, we do understand their limitations and that they don't have a lot of heart and they don't have a lot of steel about them. And you're going to take some... you're going to take some really disappointing and really poor moments when you back on some of these crappy teams. But still, the situation that they were in, the circumstances of this game, it was all in front of them. They had every opportunity, and that's what made it so painful to watch. So I want to talk about the moments that killed the Knights during this game, and keeping in mind, because they are weak-minded, they just couldn't respond to any of these. The opening try, Cody Walker, to me, that's an obstruction. So when you've got a weak team that can't face much adversity, last thing you need is them getting is their opponent getting a leg up by being gifted a try. Look, the bunker, I think it was Klein, he says that the defender's got a clean go at Walker, so therefore the fact that he ran behind Burgess and used him like an NFL blocker seems to be okay. If you literally watch the replay, multiple defenders stop. Randall has an early shot at Walker, slips off him, but then can't get at him again because he's literally behind his player. It sent up no try. That's a disappointing one for me. I mean, let me know, guys. Please comment if you disagree. I'll get through these comments in a second. There's a huge moment that does go the Knights' way where Dom Young comes flying from the right wing, saves what would have been a certain try for Nikarima. The Knights gather the ball. They go length of the field. Young scores on the other side. That's the first of the night of 3 tries in a row. As I said, the Knights got up 16-6. Anthony Milford has a beautiful kick, and he had some great kicks in the first half. Kicks from inside his own half, and they force a line dropout with their kick chase. Their tails are up. The crowd is amped. They don't recover the kick, the dropout. The trail goes short, as Billy's commented there. And the Knights didn't touch the ball again until they were down 18-6 about 8 minutes later. That's on them. They were so soft, and they couldn't handle the fact that they didn't get the ball back there. In fact, as I said, that was 2 quick tries by the Rabbitohs. But it was too quick when the Knights didn't even touch the ball. In fact, it was a run of 5 straight tries that the Rabbitohs scored in a 20-minute period. And the worst one, the one that hurts the most of all, the game's still manageable at 18-16. You shouldn't be giving up that many points in the first half, but the Knights get a penalty, then a repeat set, then another repeat set. They're knocking on the Rabbitohs' door. They're on their try line, couple of minutes to go in the half, and you got a bench prop throwing a double cutout pass, which of course is intercepted by Cody Walker and takes it back and scores, and you're gifting them 6 points. That's another moment that kills the Knights. And it seems to be, in the recent couple of weeks, how many times have teams scored like back-breaking tries right on the stroke of half time that ends up being monumental in the result for the game? Later in the second half, obviously the Knights are going to need a bit to go their way. They muff defusing a grubber in their in goal. They can't seem to get their hands on the ball, and it's a gift, 6 points to Bunnies again. There's another moment later on where the Knights might be mounting a comeback. I think they're within 10 or 12 points. Again, we didn't bet on them to win. We bet on them plus 6.5. And the Rabbitohs spill the ball. The Knights get it, put it through the hands to the winger, and Young spills it. And the ref says advantage taken. And it just kills me. There's absolutely no consistency. I remember vividly earlier this season, we had a Raiders bet against the Cowboys and a pivotal moment in the second half of that game when the Raiders had a lead. the Cowboys recovered a dropped ball by the Raiders. They ran it 20 meters. They offloaded. They passed through the hands. And then they got stripped in a one-on-one tackle. And the ref said, oh, they didn't have any advantage. We've got to go back. And what happened? The Cowboys ended up scoring that set. And what happened in this one? The Rabbitohs scored off the set when it should have been the Knights' ball. So that hurts. And then after all that, the Knights still would have covered the game if Bradman Best could have put the ball down when he got put straight through the line on the attacking goal line and was tackled by Nikarima and somehow spun around and not able to score one of the most powerful outside backs in the competition. So I hate to sound like I'm making a lot of excuses, but I guess what I'm saying is, you know, we have to cop it and we get told what an easy bet the Rabbitohs were and what a terrible bet the Knights were. And the truth of the matter is the Knights were horrible in so many moments, and yet I reckon you take any one of those moments I just described, you take that away, and the Knights still probably cover the game. I don't want to just make excuses for the Knights, though, because the truth of the matter is that the Rabbitohs won the physicality, the Rabbitohs won the collisions, the Rabbitohs had better line speed, better contact, less missed tackles, and it just seemed to me that the Rabbitohs could get their meters through the middle of the field a lot easier than the Knights. The Rabbitohs were up in the Knights' faces, whereas every Rabbitohs set, it seemed to be pretty easy that they could just jag back into the teeth of the defense and always get 15 meters right up the middle, or if not, an offload. And, you know, then you go back to, well, we got a bit unlucky that Jacob Saifidi was pulled out of this Knights' side. You know, he might have tightened up the middle, an Origin caliber prop. Some people might argue whether he is Origin caliber, but of course, nobody could predict McLean was going to get a hammy injury, which brought Saifidi out of the Knights side the day before the game. So in saying all that, it's pretty infuriating. It's an infuriating result. I know we said on the pod we were close to playing plus 2.5 first half, and that's like a 95% chance of covering, maybe 99%. But as I said, you throw an intercept, length of the field, 90-meter try to Walker right before halftime. Depends how you look at it. Some people might have still played that. I know I did, and some of the pod admins played that, so we were really hurting. But you could say, well, lucky at least you didn't give it as a best bet. And then, as I say, easy chance of covering the game second half, but you don't get there. And what does O'Brien have to say for himself? That maybe his team was a bit complacent because South's had a few out. Your garbage team's won about twice in 18 rounds at home, and you're going to be complacent when you're playing the side that made the grand final last year? I mean, if that's not an indictment on the coach, I don't know what is. I know O'Brien's going to come up with every excuse under the sun. I kind of feel like I'm O'Brien sometimes in these recaps because I've got to face the music. But I'll be the first to say our results have not been anywhere near good enough. At least we've probably put up some good results in previous years. I don't know what O'Brien's going to hang his hat on. Pretty worked up about that game. Very disappointed. I guess you've got to give a lot of credit to the Bunnies for just coming into this match with, you know, without full personnel, and then you lose your halfback second tackle, and simply they out-toughed the Knights and they cashed in on the opportunities that were presented to them. Sorry, with just me, I feel like I haven't kept up with all your comments, guys. So let me run through that. G'day to Brenno from the Olympic City. Sammy's got a question about the Sims tackle. I actually thought that should have been a send-off, but I might talk about that on the Broncos game. Jeff Barney's pumped up about the win in the Olympic City again by his boys. Damo's got some advice about not wasting your money betting, and certainly this season that's probably been a fair advice. Craner saying Cowboys greater than Storm. So at this point in time, are the Cowboys the biggest challengers to the Panthers? They were obviously idle this week, but a few Cowboys will be in action on Wednesday night. Billy says glory, glory, and Barney's at it again, saying it's a bounce back season for the GOAT. All right, let's move to Saturday night with Parramatta. We're victorious at Leichhardt 28-20. And before this game, Madison was ruled out for the Eels, but the Tigers also lost Tarmow and Malmalo. And the Eels had the chance to get on the board early. Don't know if I mentioned, I probably should have. We lost the mixed matchup this round as well. We needed the Rabbitohs to score less tries than the Eels. So the Rabbitohs had 7 tries in that Knights game. And sorry, just to go back to the Knights game again, because I know people say to me stuff like, oh, well, it's nothing new. You know, why would you bet on a Knights opponent to not score many points. They've had a lot of points scored against them. But this is what really gets me. Like, a few weeks ago, the Knights gave up 42 points on a Sunday afternoon to Penrith. That was a full-strength Penrith with all these players really pissed off that they'd lost Origin 1. They're giving up 42 on an afternoon game to a full-strength Penrith side that's one of the best regular season sides we've ever seen in my life. That's actually fairly excusable. How do you give up 40 points to a Rabbitohs side missing seven, lost their halfback second tackle, and you had half the ball, and you scored 28 yourself? I don't know. And you're at home. And they made a big deal about, oh, it meant so much to us to make our fans happy when they won last week. The only reason the Knights won last week is because the Titans may be one of the few teams that are as mentally weak as they are. Okay, back to Eels 28, Tigers 20. So that was my additional rant to explain that we had very little chance of winning the mixed matchup. Unfortunately, after the first half of it, we did need 8 tries by the Eels. They had 4 after about 42 minutes. So they, you know, there was a possibility. Well, this game had a possibility that Parramatta could do a number on the Tigers, but I would say the Tigers were pretty tough. And after surviving a couple of disallowed tries, let me know what you guys made of those. I thought the first one, you can accept that contest on the ball, and they're saying knocked on into a defender. But the second Eels try was disallowed for a forward pass that never happened. There's only one pass in the play, and it was clearly backwards. I think it was Reid Marnie throwing the ball literally over his head. And you can't challenge or review a forward pass. So it was a clear Eels try, opening try, that was denied. Next thing you know, the Tigers are the ones getting in front with back-to-back tries, and it was 12-0 to West early. So you had another team that was the home underdog that was up double digits in the first half. And again, it was a try right before halftime that really flipped the match on its head, because Parramatta got back in the game from 12-0 down. They get it to 12-6 on a fifth tackle play that included 3 kicks, a fortuitous grounding where Campbell Gillard didn't even know or celebrate that he'd grounded it, but he was awarded the try. And in the same play, the debutant from the Tigers, Matamua, puts a late shot on the kicker, Moses, and gets a sin bin. So a brutal moment where the Tigers are reduced to 12. Parramatta's on the board. Parramatta scores again, thinks it was through Sivo, cuts the score down 12-10. There's a minute to go in the first half. Eels receive the kickoff. You know, you're in your own half. You're playing off your own 10-20. Yes, you're playing against a reduced side, but it's unlikely there's going to be any more scoring. Well, there was. With 30 seconds to go in the half, the Eels shift the ball and score a 60-meter try that's capped off by, I think, a kick back in field, Reid Marnie scoring. And Tristan spoke about that they had some punters with big bets on Parramatta halftime, full-time. The odds of Parramatta leading at halftime when they were down 12-0 with 10 to go in the first half, that's pretty crazy. So Parramatta goes from being down 12-0 to being up 16-12. And then Parramatta scores 2 minutes into the second half as well. And suddenly you've gone from, we're on upset alert here, the Tigers are up for this, to this could be a blowout now. That might have really, really shattered Wes. And they've just gone bang, bang, bang and scored, you know, they've scored 4 tries in a 12-minute period. In fact, Wes did make a little fight back. Couldn't slot sideline conversions late in the game, so they never really worried Parramatta too much. The closest they got towards the end was within 8, and Parramatta held on. And just an observation I've got on the West Tigers side, I feel like there's some promising pieces. You know, Kamali's been handed a lemon here in trying to take over this side. It's a pretty diabolical situation, and you're limited by what the roster is. In saying that, Hastings always looks threatening. You know, Dewey, arguably one of their best players, he's back. They've had quite a few other important players who've been injured. It's unfortunate for them that Tarmow is like their designated captain, can't consistently stay on the field. But the Luke Brooks saga, you've got to remember, from day one of this season, it was publicly known that he wanted a release. He wanted to go to Newcastle, and that West didn't grant that release. So he's already annoyed about that. But the word was, well, they had Dewey coming back from ACL. They were going to keep Brooks for at least half the season and then release him when Dewey's back. Well, now Dewey's back, Brooks is still on the team. Then the word got leaked out that he was going to be benched after the bye round because they've got 3 halves in the side that can't fit the 2 spots. But then apparently, once the news was leaked, the Tigers wanted to try and be defiant and show that it wasn't true. So then they backflipped and then picked Brooks the next game after the bye. Now he comes out in the news and says he's really disappointed that people have been leaking news, and he criticizes the club and says he needs to be more selfish. And at a crucial stage in the second half, Luke Brooks makes a try-saving tackle that dislodges the ball. And I couldn't help but notice that not one teammate went up to him and congratulated him. So it looks like a nasty, toxic situation. Maybe they've got to resolve that. Maybe they've just got to move on from that situation. As I say, those late Tigers tries, even though they didn't make the conversions and make the result really in question, it decided the cover, because Parramatta were well beyond the, you know, the 13 plus, for that line was anywhere from minus 11 and a half to minus 13 and a half. But then that back door, I think both tries were by Nofaluma, pulled it back to a single digit loss. And finally, game we've spoken about a couple of times because there's a couple of excited boys from the Olympic City, was Brisbane 32 beating the Dragons 18. And what I will say about this game is this is where it does pay off to have Podonis on board, because he kept us off the Dragons. To me, the only side to bet in this game was the Dragons. So I'm kind of thankful that Podonis saw it the other way. And I just couldn't justify playing Brisbane with so many changes today. And then obviously the COVID news in the Queensland camp directly affected Brisbane, because then Oates had to come out as well. And we mentioned that in addition to all their origin reps, Flegler is 18th man, but as a precaution, doesn't play in this game. You had Reynolds, who you're obviously relying on a lot to captain, to lead the side, but also for where their points are going to come from and their direction. And you knew that he was a bit hampered. He didn't look 100% against the Cowboys. Whereas the Dragons, yeah, Ben Hunt was out. You slot Sullivan straight in there. They were a lot more complete. They've been getting it done this season. This was a huge opportunity for St. George. So I would have thought they were the side. Maybe if the first half hadn't gone the way it did, which included Tarek Sims being sin bin twice. And it wasn't a coincidence. It was a real intent, as we've got some Dragons fans weighing in. So let us know what you reckon. Blanchey says there, he's triggered. There was obvious intent by the Dragons, a couple of things. To come out and be super physical, to hit hard, to tackle hard, to run hard, and to complete high. And they probably thought that was going to get it done. And they rattled Adam Reynolds multiple times. You know, McCullough put a hit on Adam Reynolds that I thought was very fortunate to not be sent to the sin bin. Almost felt like the ref went easy on him, because he'd already sent Sims to the sin bin for a hit on Reynolds as well, where they really rattled his rib cage earlier. That wasn't a kick. That was one where he dug into the line. And then the question came in earlier about, try and see what Sammy Cox was asking. Did the tackle on Sims deserve a sin bin? See, I thought that, like, if they were harsh, it was direct contact from shoulder to head, and it was a sin bin at the bare minimum and could have been even worse. So that obviously hampered the Dragons, because they copped two sin bins first half. Broncos scored both times that the Dragons had them in the bin. The Dragons did respond and get a try back each time to answer themselves. And then Brisbane got that late try. Katoni Staggs, you kind of were looking to him with Brisbane down on troops, looking for him to have a big game. Well, he got a double. Shout out Josh Boone in our group, tipped it 21-1 for a Staggs double. And I can't remember the other old mate's name, but another bloke in our group put a post up for Hoiter to score. And he did as well on debut. So they filling in where Corey Oates would have been. And he didn't let him down and did score the opening try of both halves. So ultimately, how did Brisbane win this game so comfortably? Well, I felt like, in addition to those big guys like Booney commenting there, Katoni Staggs, in addition to those guys having big games, and I think the referee penalising those hits on Reynolds, it kind of took away the Dragons' game plan, because they couldn't keep doing it and they couldn't keep hitting him as blatantly throughout the game. And it actually seemed like it took a little bit of pressure off him. Just felt to me like the Broncos were willing to come out and play positive footy and spin the footy around, whereas the Dragons thought they would just turn up and win as long as they didn't make any mistakes and just stayed strong and completed. And that wasn't enough. It was beautiful conditions, and the Broncos opened them up and were willing to play some really positive footy, and outside backs and guys like Ezra Mam had a bit of a field day. Tessie knew, you know, his job security is up in the air with the Walsh release news. But these guys had a great day out. And in the second half, especially when there's a bit extra fatigue in the game, Brisbane ran in some long-range tries, and that was the difference. So thanks for tuning in, guys. That's my recap of the four games, but I'll be back tomorrow joined by some of my friends from the Tripod family and some legends to preview this decider. Now that's what it's all about. That's all we're going to be talking about. Game three, it's got a different spin on it now. Queensland's backs are against the wall, that's for sure, with their best player, Munster, out. But look, you know, they say you still got to play the games. That's why we play the games, because we don't always know what's going to happen. So I remember an Origin decider 3 years ago where Queensland was given no chance, and that game was tied with 10 seconds to go. I don't want to talk about what happened after that, but let's not assume we know the result yet. I think if any Queenslanders are saying, oh, congratulations, you've won, that's just a way of stirring up New South Wales and telling you guys that it's yours to lose now. But I'm definitely going to have a closer look at this game now as well and see if there's any angles we can attack. We did find a very comfortable winner in game two for you, so we'll share any value that we see tomorrow night. I hope you guys can join me then, but thank you tonight for joining me in the recap, and enjoy your week, guys, and enjoy Origin 3. Lego.